take too much of the time. So we may start with the tape. I don't know if anybody is taping it already. My name is Henning von Flügelgen. I came from Germany, Berlin, Europe. And the topic tonight is, even though the announcement might have confused you, so anybody is interested in the situation of Luba may go to the Greek side room. The topic here will be Cuba. So it was entitled Who Blows the Tuba in Cuba? The Cuban response on the changes in the Eastern Europe, and now we might also talk a little about the Soviet Union and the very recent effects. I personally have been to Cuba twice in the last year, so my experiences are not so very recent as they should be, actually, to talk about it. But however, I hope that will be enough to turn into a discussion. I am not a member of the teaching staff, so I do not teach. I rather just would like to talk and to discuss. The title has a variety of meanings. Of course, if you want to blow a tuba, you need some air to blow, and the question might be, where does this air come from? And it came from Eastern Europe in the last 20 or 30 years a lot, and as you might have read maybe a couple of days ago, Cuba announced that they want to discuss again the economic embargo, what the US has drawn onto Cuba in the UN, so they might expect some more fresh air perhaps from that direction now. However, also it is a question who got the power in Cuba, and are things going to change over there, or will Cuba remain perhaps one of the very last socialist countries in the world, following the basic idea of Marxism and Leninism, basically Marxism and Stalinism. Well, how do we get into it? I don't know how much you know about Cuba and the situation there. Maybe I just give a brief introduction by telling a little how the country looks like and what's going on there, and then a little more about the economical changes meanwhile the last few years, as some kind of result or effect of the changes in Eastern Europe. And I thought we also might talk a little on the history and on the role of the US, how much they actually influence the situation in Cuba, and not always in a way what would be appropriate for the US. They actually do themselves a bad job sometimes, and well, we also could have some remarks on the situation, Cuba being an example for the Tricont, as I used to say. Instead of Third World, it is a Latin abbreviation for the three continents, Asia, Africa, and America, besides US and Canada. Okay, so why don't we start? Cuba is not very big related to the compared to the United States, but it has a huge variety of different landscapes and situations. When I came there first, I thought I was just dropped into a movie, because everything looked so strange, so different. You're really put there, like, I guess it's, although I never have been there, it's probably quite a similar situation as in Florida, a similar temperature and climate and so on. You see the moon already being more like a bowl instead of a letter, C-O-A. And the situation there is, I found out that you could quite nicely compare the day life situation very much to East Germany, to find out what is the difference actually of the Cuban socialism to other kinds of socialism. So what I would like to put an emphasis on is that, even though I do not agree in the recent politics of Cuba, Fidel Castro has done very good things for that country. Cuba is the only country in Latin America, and with Latin America I refer to the Caribbean Sea, the Isles of the Caribbean, Central America and South America. It is the only country who could compare their health system, the quality and the amount of doctors taking care of people, the quality of medication, the birth rate and the death rate of newborn children and so on, to Western countries, what is so far away from any other country in Latin America and Africa, that it is really outstanding. And also the point or the question of literacy, you know, there is almost no analphabetism in Cuba, and that is very much related also to the big interest of the early revolution in order to get the people free, not only free from superior powers, but also free, you know, from being ruled by other people without knowing anything. But of course, to be able to read a lot doesn't mean so much if you have the situation like in the US or in East Germany, in previous East Germany, that newspapers like the Granma, what it is called in Cuba, the big news magazine or newspaper in La Habana, the capital, if all these news, what you get are somehow, you know, made up news, centralized news, planned news, they just tell you what they want you to know, and they will, experienced also in East Germany, they would give whole pages of a 6 or 8 pages issue only for speeches of Fidel Castro. You know, there is so much room related to one person there. But however, Fidel Castro is very much beloved still in his country, and the people are very, very grateful for all the things he did for them, even though you have some kind of security system, of course, as we tried to point out last night in the discussion, that totalitarian systems always, you know, somehow have to fight their own people and can't really trust their own people. So, you see, this is some kind of balance. Cuba is pretty independent in medication, for example, because they just use and work with 200 different kinds of medications. What they, you know, they don't have combined medications, so they really go for every single problem you have. Whenever you got a cold, you know, they have different medication for your nose, for your throat, and against fever and so on. All this works out very well, and even when you go there as a tourist, you will be able to enjoy this health system, even though you might pay a little in foreign currency. They have also, like in East Germany, two different currencies, the currency for the people who live there, and then the foreign currency, what is dollars, of course, what Cuban people are not allowed to own at all. So it's also not allowed to exchange money on the streets whatsoever. It's illegal, of course. It's not allowed for Cuban people to invite foreigners to stay at their places, even though I did all of it in order to experience and to get closer to people, to see how daily life is. I was going to tell about differences. I now have explained more what is pretty similar in these two countries, somehow referring to some sessions I did weeks before on the East German subject. So a big difference is how the people deal with the socialism, how the people deal with their country and their situation. And for me, it was, even though the climate is so different, pretty surprising how they work it out. So you will find almost any day in Cuba, people in La Habana, for example, celebrating, finding reasons to celebrate. They just close down streets, put up a couple of speakers, and have a good party there. And people are dancing there. And there was almost no evening where you couldn't find somewhere in the city places, you know, just to join in, to dance, and people would enforce you to stay there and to celebrate and to enjoy there. Also, you would have, of course, lots of propaganda on the streets. Usually, it would be patria o muerte, what is, you know, home country or death, fighting for their idea of freedom, freedom of cultural and political influence and imperialism. And so it is no wonder that just recently in Alabama there was again some inmates in a prison trying to show up that they didn't want to be returned to Cuba and shouting freedom or dead, you know. So libertad o muerte, what is pretty close, I suppose. That might tell also about the strong influence of these kind of propaganda. But the difference is, in East Germany you found that, as Germans are, they do everything, you know, very very exact and all in the same color with the same kind of handwriting. There was much more colorful. They had different pictures and using all kinds of colors what could appear. And we liked most a sign of a huge image of Che Guevara. And there was written underneath to be like him, you know, like having this kind of ideal a person to follow, however. You would see, of course, very many pictures of Fidel Castro as well, but it would give a different approach. Okay, so this is maybe just a brief drawback on the country. It might surprise you, the economical situation now is that they get the most money by selling the petrol they get from the USSR to Western countries in order to gain dollars for that. So that's actually the biggest income for Cuba, what means, of course, shortage inside the country in order to sell as much as possible. The tobacco industries and the sugar industries are following soon then, and very important became, of course, the tourism. So they really work hard on making it comfortable to everybody who's coming to the country, even though I found out that more than 95% never return to Cuba. It is just like what they can offer related to the landscape they have, related to the climate and so on, as services, is so different from that what you get in other places with similar situations. And I guess that too many people just wanted to have a cheap holiday there and find out that if you save money, of course you won't get the same service for that money. Also, even though Cuba is a very, very healthy country, it's one of the few countries where you can drink every water, you can eat ice cream on the streets, you don't even have to care about the things what I wouldn't really suggest in all the other Latin American countries, at least those where I have been to. It seems to be pretty comfortable when you stay there, but afterwards many people might think that they didn't feel so 100% safe. You are entirely safe in the streets. You can walk there at 2 in the morning through dark alleys in La Habana. Nobody will offend you, touch you, come close to you. But you see very often that Cuban people who approach to tourists might be taken away to prison for a couple of days. So they take very often students who get too close, as long as they are not supposed to tourists. They put them to jail for 4 or 6 weeks usually. And that makes, you know, that gives you some kind of impression what you don't feel very happy with when you experience it sometimes. So the economical situation now changed a lot. I don't know, maybe I should give you a break, or maybe there are questions already.
What was the economical system before? Was Russia supplying a great deal of products?
Yeah,
support,
of course. Kind. Like before the revolution, the U.S. was the biggest trading partner, and that turned down both for the political reasons and for these economical boycotts.
Mostly it was sugar.
Sugar, yeah. sugar became very important, or was very important in those days. Of course, the tobacco industries, they produced cigars, as you know, and sold them. And then, what was the third one? I don't know, at those days. But as I said, this buying and selling of petrol became more important, and tourism became very important then. So this is now the situation that the broadest income they had was by getting the petrol from the USSR and selling it to Western countries in order to get Western currency. And then, of course, fruits was the one that I was referring to. So pineapples and all kinds of lemons and oranges and so on. The Soviet Union was, of course, a big donator. I think they gave about 2 billion rubles a year to Cuba. And since Gorbachev, I think he announced it in late 88 or 89, that after 2 years they would stop to give these donations anymore because of the shortage in their country itself. They also then said that they want to get the petrol they sell to Cuba being paid in dollars as well. What means that now they couldn't use anymore the rubles or whatever, these not transferable currency. They had to give part of the dollars they earned from selling the petrol in order to pay for the petrol. And then many things became more complicated because East Germany was the second biggest trading partner, and then following by Hungary and Czechoslovakia and so on. And what that actually means is, for example, the whole transportation system in La Habana, for example, is based on buses. These buses are Icarus buses from Hungary. And since the 1st January of, I think, 1990, Hungary said, you can still buy those things, but we want dollars now. We don't want rubles anymore. So they were short of dollars anyway there. So what happened actually is that they tried to build buses and repair buses by using other buses. What meant the same problem as the petrol. So that means that nowadays in La Habana, referred to my sources, buses will run only in the rush hours in the morning and in the evening anymore. And I was driving a lot with buses, and you know, you just got to imagine, you drive as a bus, the bus is totally crowded, and you have spots like this size in the floor of the bus, what are just open. You see the street, you know, passing underneath, and you keep standing around there in order not to fall through that hole. That would be pretty usual for everybody there. And of course it is not for us. And that's, I don't know, it's both, you know, it's just the economical problem, but it's of course also that in socialist countries, people do not feel so much related to their possessions. I mean, that's not their possession, the bus driver doesn't care so much, you just gotta drive, you know, and that's what he takes care about. So that turned the situation very much.
Do you think that the U.S. embargo of Cuba and the subsequent, you know, huge amount of aid that Cuba got from Russia and other Eastern European countries is actually what sort of contributed to the success of, or the relative success of, Cuba as a socialist state? I mean, because all of a sudden it became a symbol. So in a way, isn't it an artificial socialist state because of its position?
Yeah. As I understand now, the situation in Eastern Europe would become more and more clear every day as more you read papers and more things are now told and open to the public all over the world. It seems to me very much like that. That, as a matter of fact, socialist countries, as we had them yet, I don't speak about the utopia. I just speak about the actual existing countries. Always pays more than it gets. You know, it can't really afford itself as a system. And that means that even Cuba, Nicaragua is a very good example as well, the Sandinist revolution was turned down after just a little after 10 years because they had to spend all their money in arms and weapons and their war, their civil war. If that wouldn't have been, it might have turned out. And in Cuba, the situation is a little better because they didn't have to spend so much money on weapons. They just have their security system in order to, you know, to see what's going on the Caribbean around them. But as you remember, we had this getting close under Kennedy to the Third World War, the situation that Khrushchev allowed and bring over all these missiles to Cuba. And still there are, of course, many aides and folks from the Soviet Union helping and supporting.
I came in a little bit late, but you were talking about the tourists. Where are the tourists from primarily?
That's a good question, yeah. Well, most of the tourists, well, we have two different kinds of tourists, actually. One are the tourists who come or maybe three different kinds, you know. One group, well, yeah, I would say one group are those who just come to Cuba in order to come to sessions, to conferences, to meetings, and so on. These are at 99% people from other Latin American countries who join there together because Cuba is very good in organizing these things, very eager to do that, and you know, it's a very nice place to do these things. Like, Latin America has only one big important film festival that is held in Havana in December every year. And what is really important for all these countries in order to show their films to the world's audience. Second group would be those people who are coming there in order to have a very cheap vacation on the beach. So they don't care about Cuba at all. They just care about the sun, the water, and maybe the shadow or the shades in the beach. And they come usually from Europe. Yeah. And the third group are those, you know, kind of tourists who are interested in some kind of political tourists, who still keep up their dream of existing socialism and of all their books they were reading about Castro and Che Guevara, and they are usually from Europe as well. Some Americans, of course. And
many social democratic countries have sort of groups that go over and help work in the fields. I had a good friend in Sweden who went with a group of people, and they basically flew to Cuba and spent 2 weeks there, almost as missionaries, in a way, you know, because they believe in that system.
That's right. You have similar situations in a variety of Central American countries, of course, like El Salvador and Nicaragua. And what is interesting, actually, in Nicaragua is that the solidarity groups keep doing it at the very moment, even though the political power has changed. Because they feel related to the people, not to the system so much anymore.
Doing
this kind of solidarity work, moving over for 4 weeks and helping on plantations, picking coffee or whatever, and helping in hospitals. This always has, you know, a slight aftertaste. I don't know if that's a proper English word. You know, if you eat some fruit and it tastes nice, but afterwards you have a bitter taste in your mouth, and that is both. I mean, first of all, these people, these mostly young folks who go over to do this kind of work, people have calculated that if they would donate the money what they spent for the flight instead of going there, would help the country at least twice as much. Mm-hmm. Because when they go there, either they become sick because of the different climate or some other reasons, or when they pick let's say coffee or so, it took them at least twice as much time to pick as much coffee beans as the folks who are used to do that, you know. So it is that belongs to that kind of tourism what I mentioned as a third group actually. But even though it might sound a little cynical, I would never turn somebody down who wants to do it because the value of meeting people, learning to know each other, of learning the language, of getting an idea what's going on there, and maybe even having the chance to rectify your view on the country is much more than a couple of dollars for the flight. So
you expect that all of the support from the Soviet will dwindle to nothing.
Cuba was pretty precautious now when the coup started in the Soviet Union, because the idea was if there would become a chaos, then they wouldn't probably get any aid because nobody would take care of Cuba those days. And that's the situation what we have anyhow, on what I tried to mention last night also on the podium, on the forum. That as more we now concentrate on the events in Eastern Europe, especially now in the Soviet Union, as less people are interested or involved in Tricont countries and the effects there. So that means also all the donations, like as you might know, Germany is now the biggest donator to the Soviet Union in order to help Mikhail Gorbachev and to strengthen his power again and keep it being strengthened. Less effort is now done for all the other countries. The second point was, what was the question again?
Well, the dwindling aid, I was wondering.
Oh yeah, the second point was, if the coup would have worked out, then hardliners would have gained the power who were known as people who were willing to support Cuba more than before. Mikhail Gorbachev isn't, because he was talking to Fidel Castro. They have been together, and also in the conference 2 months ago in Central America, where Cuba was participating, everybody tried to talk to Fidel Castro in order to, you got to do more, you got to change things inside your country in order to follow the change of times, There is so many, and if you look at the people in Cuba, old people will still say, this is the one and only country, and this is the one and only real lived socialism, and we are happy here. Even though we have trouble in getting the food, what we need for our daily meals, even though we don't have this transportation system anymore, we can't have our own cars and everything, But younger people, they will listen to American music in the radio, and they want more different kinds of ice cream as they were used to 10 years ago. They want, they have different ideas. So at the moment, if you ask young people in Cuba what they think about the Soviet Union, they say, what, I don't care. We have Pan American Games at the moment and we were the best and that's what counts. And don't worry about politics. But older people, they worry about it and they think about it. And they told me that they weren't very happy about the changes in Eastern Europe. They said, this is a step back. What's going on in Eastern Europe. So just to give you an idea what different thoughts might come up. I personally think that now Gorbachev will continue to withdraw aids, and that if the Soviet Union is splitting up to all these states, of course that will mean that there will be no aid at all anymore. There will be just as much trade as necessary, because the Soviet Union is very interested in the sugar of what Cuba produces. But that won't help Cuba so much.
If everything is so happy down there, why do we have so many Cubans in Florida?
Yeah, well, I didn't say that people are happy there. I said that they can deal with the socialism by celebrating. It is, as I tried to explain it 2 weeks ago, for the situation in East Germany. In East Germany, people were able to speak two different languages. One was the official language, related to the political system, and they could switch at once in a day life language what would make jokes about the same system. And that's what's happening in Cuba as well. You have people who are involved in the political ideas and still, looking forward for the ideas of the revolution, but start to learn now that things don't turn out as they wanted to, but they have gained a lot. They have gained much more. They are the poorest country from all the Caribbean countries. And so yeah, why do people go away? Well, that's the same because people are forced to stay. And I mean this, so you don't get the, if you get no choice whether you want to stay or not, then for many people the choice is, I don't want to stay here because I want to keep my freedom and decide where I want to go and what I want to do. And this is probably one, but on the other hand, you should not forget that every year in February, the U.S., what is it, the what is it, the ships, all the Navy, yeah. The U.S. Navy does exercises in the Caribbean Sea, pretty close to Cuba, and that's always the time when in Florida many Cuban people would fill their boats with proviant in order to be ready. Well, maybe this time it's not just exercise, maybe they take over the Cuba and then we will be the first to be back home. So you see, that's the other side, you know. People are leaving, but they are very eager to come back to Cuba.
Yeah, well, I can understand a person wanting to get back to his homeland. And I can't understand why people will support a government that suppresses them to that extent.
Well, the...
Just for, you know,
yeah. Well, the suppression is not so obvious in Cuba as it was in other countries. There are very many people who get the idea that their life there is all right, and actually, that's what I tried to point out with this session, that now air is getting down, now they can't blow their tuba anymore, because of all these shortages. I mean, just Panama is another example. Panama was actually the only way for Cuba to get American goods. Because Panama was buying American goods and then they were selling it to Cuba. And so that was some kind of pathway through. But since the U.S. took over and you know, was turning down Noriega there, there wasn't even this little loophole to slip through in order to get the things, what they need to for their tourism, you know. I mean, people who come there as tourists, in order to spend their dollars, they want at least some goods, you know, and most of these goods, what they buy there are tapes and video cameras and you know, all these microelectronical equipments. And they have to get it somewhere. So that was their way. And so everything is getting short. I mean, just imagine, the average car in Cuba is built in the 50s. So all the cars you see there, I'm not very, very excited about cars, so I can't tell you what kind it is. But it's one American kind, maybe Chevrolet or whatever, what was built in the late 50s, and besides five cars or so, that's all you got. These five cars are Japanese cars, what they use for tourists to rent them to tourists, you know, and they break down all the time. So, yeah. I personally think that people in Cuba feel very much related to Fidel Castro, and as long as he will be there, they probably won't show up in a way of silent or non-silent revolution. He had one opponent who was accused a couple of years ago for dealing with drugs, and so punished with death penalty. So there's still the rumor that maybe he just wanted to get rid of his opponent. But still, and there's, on the other hand, as I mentioned at the very beginning, the USA does a lot in order to make Cuban people sticking together. What happened in the Pig Bay was just, I mean, it was a perfect setup actually for Cuba. Because they had so much time to prepare everything, they expected all those boats. Fidel Castro was himself sitting in the Pig Bay in a tank and was shooting down at least one of those boats coming there. And there was no chance for those boats coming, because the planes just what came before did just enough damage to have all the Cuban people against them. And so the same happened now last spring with this Teve Martí, that from Florida, Miami, as I understood, is now ruled by Cuban people. Even, you know, the most powerful people there are Cuban people, owning the biggest banks and so on. They brought up the idea, also it was told, I don't know about it, that the CIA was involved in it, to build up this Teve Martí, some kind of television service in Spanish language, what was just in order to send over news and informations and films to Cuba. That was pretty strange, because in Cuba they could receive American television before, and nobody spoke about it. But now this sounds like, you know, just choosing the name Martí, what was the liberator of Cuba in 1898, for this kind of channel, in order to do some kind of anti-propaganda, just, you know, made everybody being against it. So they said, "You Yankees, stay where you are, leave us alone with all your programs, we don't need it." And what they did, they had enough time to build some jamming stuff up, you know, and so they jammed the single, and nobody is able to receive it, and, you know. So what's the use? The only use was that Cuban people said, well, these Americans, they from the US, they just don't want to leave us alone, they want to become power over us and, you know, do some cultural or whatever imperialism on us. And that just, you know, was a new seed for all that. Because before that happened, in December last, the year before, and in January, there was, you know, it became very much like 50-50 for those who would support Fidel Castro in the recent situation and those people who would oppose it. These things just build up, you know, this kind of we are one nation, we got to stick together now, because we got this common enemy outside. And that is it's pretty irony, you know, somehow, that all the efforts being done to split it up actually just get them closer together.
I was in Canada a few weeks ago, in eastern Canada, and I was surprised at the amount of Cuban coffee and tobacco products and fruit and vegetables from Cuba that are on the markets there. I mean, you see it almost everywhere. And the articles in the Canadian papers, at least in the eastern Canada, were indicating that Canada saw that Cuba now as an opportunity, as a trade void, to step in there and form a trade alliance and cultivate, as Russia backed out, cultivate more trade with Cuba.
That's right. That's exactly what is somehow a result of losing all their Eastern European trading partners, you know. So
Cuba was anxious for this trade because they were getting dollars, Canadian dollars.
Yeah, and that's exactly what turns it now. And I'm not sure what happened since I've been there last year twice. I could see very, very strongly a change already in between these two times, that there was such a food shortage, you know. So the people just could get enough food if they would have any connections to people from the countryside who would come at the weekends and selling kind of black market bananas. Usually they have different bananas, what they boil for cooking or baking, and what are more related to potatoes maybe than to the idea of fruit.
You said that a lot of the loyalty is to Castro. Has he built system that will perpetuate itself, or Castro can't go on forever?
That's right. Well, as I said, therefore Che Guevara is already dead for quite a while. So the whole idea of the revolution is just related to his person, or almost related to his person. And so all the donations, the gifts, or the results of the revolution are also related to this person. So I don't know if it's all right to do this kind of forecast, but I wouldn't be surprised, let's say it that way, if Fidel Castro dies if they would start a civil war or a quick change. They tried to do some 2.5 years ago some kind of rectification, how they call it, some rectification, what was some kind of answer to perestroika and glasnost in the USSR. But what it actually meant was just some kind of clearing up their political structures from people who could oppose it somehow. So it wasn't really a change at all. It was just, you know, a reason to get rid of people who might have different ideas now. And that's actually the big disadvantage, that these people just stick too strong to that what has happened when they started the revolution, that they can't really see how the world changes and try to follow new ideas, new situations, and so on. And that would avoid, as we have seen it in Eastern Europe, to make it possible for people to own a Xerox copy machine or whatever, you know, that nobody could copy anything or multiply anything. And they also had this policy in you know, taking any material from any country for free, like films and you know. So in Cuba, it's pretty funny, when you go to the cinema, you will see basically North American movies, Hollywood movies, what sometimes they look like that they filmed from some screen, the whole film. They just, you know, are 60 millimeter copies somehow, you know, robbed copies somewhere. So when I was there, they have shown Twins with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Daniel DeVito. It was running there month after month after month, and people were eager to queue or to get in line for hours sometimes, you know, in order to see a very bad quality of the film. You hardly could see, I mean, it was just like Super 8 or so, you know, the impression. And the sound was, I mean, it was just dump, you know, like they would have made the sound in the basement or so. It was really strange, but, you know, they went there and they... Some other night I was surprised, you know, what a big line there for another movie. Maybe that's a good one, therefore it doesn't cost any money, just, I don't know, let's say 25 cents or so to see a film there. I got into line and it was called Casa de la Fantasmas or so, and I just didn't know what it might be. It was Ghostbusters. So, you know, they get all these films in. And that's what the young people really like. So at least they found out, you know, that they keep people being happy by you know, having showing all these films and allowing them to listen to all the American music, what they dance after, even though actually Caribbean music is so strong and related to the tradition that they do a lot on their own there. But as you might have heard, very important jazz musician just has left its country on a travel to the US and is not going to return, who has supported the country for 20 years or so, you know. So this is getting tougher and tougher at the very moment, and Cuba is really standing with the back to the wall already. And so this Canada idea, you know, that is the very little spot at the horizon and the very little hope they can have. If they can't maintain any trade with other countries, and meanwhile the next few months or years, the people will just get outrageous because they don't have food. I mean, if they don't have food, they can't be content with their system.
I recently read where, I don't know how, a short period of time, they bought something like 15 million bicycles from China.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder how much help China could get from there. Maybe they could ship some sugar to China for the bikes or something, but I can't picture China being a big help in their economic situation.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. That was actually the first glance that they, after the Soviet Union was shortcutting and they lost East Germany, Hungary, Poland and Czechoslovakia, they tried to get in touch with Albania, what already became also open-minded now, and to China. And this trade was just because they don't get the petrol anymore. So what are they going to do? Buying bicycles, you know. In order, that's, yeah.
The article said.
So that's just
to
clear.
You don't see very many cars anymore. Everybody's riding bicycles.
That's right. And the last, the very last step was, you know, then at the what was it, 21st of August now, appealing at the UN in order to discuss these UN the embargo, the economical embargo of the US again, in order to at least be able to have you know, trade relationships to countries who have some subsidies. Is it subsidiaries? To the U.S., you know, and that they can trade with them.
I was thinking about sugar. That seems to be a real important product for Cuba, and it's very labor intensive. They don't have modern machinery for.
They have machines, but not that kind of machines. What we use, and of course, they don't produce these machines themselves. So they run out of petrol, and again of the things what they need in order to keep those machines maintained.
So there could be other countries in the world that could produce the sugar at a lower price than Cuba. And
Brazil, for example, yeah.
Undercut Cuba. Mm-hmm. So even that's going.
You see, one of the problems with that market, sugar market, is the world market, and depending on what that market is, that market drops, they then in turn lose substantial dollars in the marketplace.
Well, but it was different before when they used sugar in exchange to Eastern European countries. You know. And so they are more and more forced to work with capitalist countries and so to work with capitalism. Yeah. And that's actually what your question was, I mean, your idea before, that if how much Cuba worked as a socialist country only because of the aids of other countries, and if it could survive now without these aids. I don't know about the time. Do we have?
Yeah.
I don't want to keep you too long.
25 to 8.
Is it okay? So well, let's just if there's any more questions or comments or.
I just want to say my only. Probably exposure to Cuba recently has been the Pan American Games, which you mentioned earlier. Talking about the economic situation of the country, I can only assume that putting on an event such as that probably put some drain upon the economy. Was it another thing? By watching the games, there was extreme Cuban nationalism that came, you know, across on the television. Everyone was against the United States, it seemed like, regardless of what country was competing, particularly with the Cubans in the stands. I understand all the Cuban citizens were allowed free into all the games. They didn't have to pay for that. I don't know, was the Pan American Games a big deal when you were in Cuba? Was it something you were looking forward to?
Yes. Yeah, well, you know, they all their efforts in building sites were now related to the Pan American Games. And as I said, you know, this TV Marti thing really has ripped off or torn off a bigger grave or whatever between those two countries. I mean, as a matter of fact, the culture is so related to the U.S. culture. I mean, baseball is their major game, you know, and these huge interests in sports and basketball, for example, you know. I mean, I played basketball with Cuban people. I just, you know, I was just staring at them, and you got just no chance, you know. You just, I mean, they're incredible. Everybody on the street would you know, just play as I don't know, professional or whatever. They are really, really, really very interested in all these sports and things, and maybe that's not so different from the U.S. It's broad interest. And I guess, you know, this, well, I mean, Caesar was wise enough to have bread and games, and, you know, if you don't get enough bread, you need some more games, perhaps, and that's what it was, maybe. And that's what keeps people sticking together and having some ideal. You know, if they don't shout for Fidel anymore, then at least for their country. And they got a beautiful country, yeah. And they got good people there, and they can be proud of it.
It's funny to think back on history, and the whole reason for the trade embargo on Cuba was this, not really fear of Cuba, but fear of communism overtaking the world, and behind that, fear of the Soviet Union. And now that fear seems to have dissolved or diminished to an incredible extent, we still have this trade embargo that now seems rather more spiteful than anything else, you know.
U.S. diplomats said in privacy, not without mentioning names, that they probably will turn that down, this request of Cuba, in discussing this issue at the UN. You can evaluate it however you want to.
All over the world, though, wherever there's been conflict, Cuba has been on the opposite side of America. Angola, Nicaragua, they shipped as many of their criminals to those countries as they could during the boat lift, which wasn't doing us any favors.
You mind this Mariel boat lift?
Except for the humanitarian standpoint, I can see no reason to lift the embargo as long as Castro is in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I personally think we made a terrible mistake when we backed Batista back in, what was it, the 30s? But that is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, there's been nothing but the evil America as far as Cuba's concerned. If they don't want to have anything to do with us except our economy, then let it go.
They don't really want, I think, as far as I understood the reports, they don't want to trade with the U.S. They just don't want the U.S. to influence other countries in not trading with them.
Well, apparently other countries do trade with them.
They do, yeah. But probably not all of them they wanted to trade with.
Well, their internal policies and things are going to kill them. It doesn't have to be that outside.
Mm-hmm. I thank you very much for your interest and participation and discussion.
Thank you.